seen anything like that.
I'm a very confident front runner for Caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it!
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
All right, you're welcome along. It is the Ryan line. Shane Ryan is looking very pensive to start this podcast. Deep in thought.
The literal moment you said welcome along to my phone started ringing. I don't know if people could hear that. And it's spam. So
spam. Put them on.
Spam.
Let's spam them back.
Yeah. Do you think I should just call them back, answer the phone? I do that now if I answer because I'm not sure and somebody pitches me something. I come back. Usually it's like they want to buy the house. And I'm like, I'll sell it for $3 million.
And sorry, the we want to buy the house is spam or it is someone who wants to buy your house?
No, it's like there may be something to it, but it's weird, spammy stuff, and they always want to buy it for like half of its value. I think they're preying on people who are in trouble and need a quick cash infusion. So it's spam adjacent, at least.
Wow, I never realized this was a thing.
Oh, you don't have that?
No.
Yeah, we get calls, and they're like, hey, are you interested in selling your property?
So they're going, we can give you $500,000 up front tomorrow for your house.
Something like that, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I've never followed it up. I assume that's what they do.
Americans. Yeah. You're always up to something, aren't you?
Well, let me tell you, they're not calling from America. Let's leave it at that.
Wow.
just so you know, this is not an American a thing that's happening.
How are you? Is life good?
I'm good, Nathan. I'm good. Life is good. I think everything's great. How about you?
I'm okay. I'm all right. Yeah, life is good. Yeah, I'm excited about the playoffs.
Oh, my God. I can tell you're vibrating with energy right now of the kind that you only get from the FedEx Cup playoffs.
The European Tour is also back this week, and we're heading into a real sweet spot with the European Tour. I've just read in the last 8 seconds that the great Sergio Garcia is coming to the Irish Open.
Ooh, wow.
We're getting all the top dogs. Trump is coming to the Irish Open.
How about that, man? You're getting the best people.
We are. What's your slight tangent here? What's your hot take on Trump getting in the catering buggy and walking off the other side of the plane while leaving all of the journalists and his staff to get blown up by the Iranians?
Yeah, that was something. That was, the least surprising news story I've read in the last 12 years. I don't know. I don't even know what to say anymore. What do you say, Nathan, when it's like you're so deep in the apocalypse that you just sort of like resigned yourself to the weirdest story coming out? Like if there was a story tomorrow that's like, oh, he kicked 8 puppies to death with his supporters cheering on, I'd be like, yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense.
So last week I introduced the Strickerometer to the golfing conversation, and it's fair to say it hasn't taken off.
Oh, it's okay. Okay.
The beard said, debate went on far too long. WTF has Stricker ever done other than kissing Tiger's bottom? P.S. Mm. Keimer actually hold the putt that retained the Ryder Cup, not won the Ryder Cup. Question for Shane, is Keimer the most underrated golfer ever? Question for Shane, is Stricker the most overrated golfer ever? Only one top three in a major in 59 attempts, only one top 10 in players after 24 attempts.
Here's the thing with Stricker. I think he's pretty properly rated, don't you? I mean, is there anybody out there going, oh, Steve Stricker's the greatest golfer to ever live?
That's why it's the Strickerometer. He's sort of right in the middle, I would have thought.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, guys who've had okay careers but won a major, are they above or beyond the Strickerometer?
So here's the thing with Stricker, man. He grew up in a small Wisconsin town, which, if you know your American geography, there are not a lot of professional golfers that come from Wisconsin. Andy North is the only one that really comes to mind. And, you know, he never had elite golf training. He never really, like, he didn't start until he was like 8 or 9 or something like that, which I know it sounds ridiculous, but that's actually kind of old for professional golfers. He just came from a really normal northern place where he could only golf a few months out of the year. And he turned himself into a really good pro who won a bunch of PGA Tour events. I don't think there's, and he didn't hit very far either. That's the other thing. The guy couldn't hit far at all. I don't think there's anybody out there going, oh my God, Steve Stricker's overrated. Everybody knows exactly what he is. He never won a major. Yes, he never won a Players or anything like that, but he won a few tournaments and he had a good career and he won a Ryder Cup, right? I mean, the guy pretty much punched past his weight. So first of all, I don't like the Stricker slander. I don't think it's necessary or even correct. Is Keimer underrated? See, the thing with Keimer is he just disappeared for long stretches. And so, yeah, he has some unbelievable career achievements, and he's an elite golfer, but he just went away for long periods of time. And then he came back. So that's kind of, it's kind of a weird thing. You don't always see it. It is something that's been done before, but you don't always see that kind of trajectory where somebody is just gone, and then all of a sudden they're elite again, and they win another major. So I don't really think he's underrated. I think when people think of him, they go, yeah, the guy won two majors. He won a Players Championship. You know, he had some big Ryder Cup moments. In both cases, I'm not really sure that we're over or underrating either guy. Am I crazy, Nathan?
I think you're right. I think Martin Keimer is a prime example of what Harrington talks about sometimes, that you're better off being inconsistent in golf. Mm. You know, he turned up and he won big. Now, he did have a period as well where obviously he was consistent enough to become the world number one. But Actually, as you say, he had massive dips, but incredible highs. That's why I keep saying Stricker is a nice barometer. He's had an incredible career, won a load of money, won lots of PGA Tour events, but he's missing that major. Like the beard, load of bollocks. We always enjoy your interaction, but then came back to answer his own question when nobody else interacted with him to say, I'm still miffed by this. Comparing Keimer to Stricker is like comparing Stricker to Standy Lyle. Compare Stricker to Sam Torrance and McGinley by all means, but not to double major winners.
Yeah, well, okay, that's fair. I will say that's fair. So I'm looking at Keimer's career. It's exactly what I thought it was, where he was unbelievable from 28 through 2010, right? He won a bunch of tournaments, including the PGA, where he beat Bubba in the playoff. Although he only won that one because Dustin Johnson doesn't know what a bunker is. But then he disappears. Then he comes back. And all of a sudden in 2014, which, by the way, is the first year I covered the PGA Tour. And I was out there like for 35 weeks. That's when I rode Slaying the Tiger. He's unbelievable. I mean, he won the Players. And then he wins at Pinehurst at the U.S. Open in a complete rout. I think he won by 6 shots over everybody else at least. So you're like, oh, Keimer's back. He figured it out. We haven't heard from him since, really. I mean, yeah, you did in like at Medina was before that. So yeah,
Medina really was 2012. Well, he went to live and was part of, along with sort of Stenson, and could have been a Ryder Cup captain and all of that sort of stuff, but sort of ruined it on himself.
I mean, more in the sense that he really was never elite again. So that was kind of it for him. And by the way, I loved Keimer. Have you had the chance to listen to him speak ever extended period of time? He's awesome. I mean, he's like, he was up there with Graham McDowell for me for the two guys I really was like, I'm not going to miss their press conference if I'm there. And it was so disappointing for both of them that they went to live and looked like such idiots when they did. Keimer, McDowell looked like more of an idiot than Keimer did.
Absolutely.
Still,
Keimer did that thing, though, when he was at his absolute peak where he decided, I want to win the Masters. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to change my game enable me to win the Masters, and screwed up the rest of his game.
Yeah. Well, and that happens. I mean, Stricker went through that too, actually. Stricker, he had a great story when I spoke to him before Whistling Straits, where basically he played a round of golf with Tiger Woods when Tiger was just coming up, and was like, oh, shit. Like, I don't know what to do. I'm screwed. Like, I'm really screwed. And he got legitimately depressed about it because he was like, this guy is playing a completely different game from me. And so he chased distance a little bit, and it made him worse. And he got back to who he was and won a couple more tournaments. That's when he won his, you know, comeback player of the year twice in a row, which is still very funny to me. So, Stricker maxed out his potential. But let's say that. Keimer is a better golfer in every single way, including career achievements. Yes. But Stricker is, like, heroic in the sense that this guy shouldn't have been doing anything on the professional golf world and made a nice career for himself.
Question for Shane from Stevie K. On the back of today's conversation about Lowry, so we spoke last week about Shane Lowry dropping to 49th in the world and the real struggles he's had since the Cognizant and the impact that had on his form. Something I've wanted to highlight for years. This guy is massively overpraised. Allow me. He's obviously a very good golfer and an Open champion. See, in a way, he could leave it there. He's a very good golfer and an Open champion.
Move on. Next question.
But I describe him almost as the Harlem Globetrotter of golf.
Uh-huh, okay.
Holds in one at every iconic hole in golf, chip in eagles, even an albatross.
However,
if I was to rank Ireland's greatest golfers, he'd absolutely be bottom of the list quite comfortably.
Oh my God. Compared to who?
There's so many questions within this, Stevie, because you've now put a set limit on your greatest golfers, and Shane Lowry is the bottom of the list. So who gets in and who doesn't get in? It's a very specific list of however many. We might get into that now. I'd have Rory and Harrington, followed by the likes of Christy O'Connor Sr., Gray McDowell, and Darren Clark ahead of him. Lowry was outside of the top 50 before he called his mate for the Zurich Classic team event, which Rory pretty much won alone. His last individual PGA Tour win was in 2019. Even his 2022 BMW PGA win at Wentworth came in a tournament shortened to 54 holes after the Queen's death. I think he's putting some back on the Queen there.
Yeah, this is on Elizabeth.
There's the Ryder Cup narrative. He's played three Ryder Cups, but never qualified automatically. He needed a captain's pick in 21, 23, and 25. Mm-hmm. Yes, the Beth Page putt was an incredible moment and officially retained the cup, but the coverage sometimes make you think we're talking about Poulterer Garcia levels of Ryder Cup pedigree. We're not. He's also had episodes where he sacked his caddy on a course and openly hacked up courses while shouting, "Fuck this place," when he was properly welcomed and treated way beyond the level he should have been. Look, he's Irish and will always be supported, but he's far from the great he's made out to be. Wow. Stevie.
I've been waiting years for a question I like this much on the Ryan line. Did I write this, Nathan? Did I write this? I might have written this in a fugue state, put it under the name, Stevie? Look, this is absolutely right in every single sense. And I've never wanted to bring this up this directly, but Lowry is beloved so much because he's you all got a little bit of blinders on about this guy, in my opinion. And Stevie just nailed this. I mean, look, everything about this is true. I am not the biggest Shane Lowry fan. I respect what he's done. He won an Open, which is incredible. And that memory, let's obviously, you know, to win it where he did is just something that's iconic and is always going to last. But man, the guy lives with a horseshoe up his, you know what? I mean, he just has all these incredible moments that don't match his pedigree. So what? You never heard that expression?
No.
Oh, like it just means you're lucky. You've got a horseshoe up your ass. Okay. Is that really not a thing there?
Not that I've heard of. I don't see anybody listening outside and mind nodding along. So.
That's fair. So look. I agree. I think it's hilarious to present it this way. It's uncharitable, but I think it's hilarious what Stevie did. Stevie, you did it. This is the best question we've had on the show. Nathan, go ahead. Do your you know, Homer thing. Tell us we're wrong.
Well, I'll give you some of the responses on the Discord. The Beard said, Scotland would love a Shane Lowry. Scotland would love a Shane Lowry. Exactly.
That's true.
The Missing Link said, bold take, and I'd argue a very bad one. I don't think people put Lowry on the same pedestal as Poulter or Rory for a start. They're a level above for various reasons. I'd agree Shane has had a flashy career, so more well-known than he maybe should be, but it also argues one of the few Europeans with longevity on the PGA Tour and was a shoe-in pick for two of three Ryder Cups. Don't think McDowell is a comparison. If Shane were retired tomorrow, he'd have a better career than McDowell and a more consistent career with amazing moments. McDowell took advantage of that weird post-Tiger era and for sure had a good 3-4 years. Clark was world-class, arguably didn't win as much as he should, which is why his Open was such a beautiful sporting moment. I still think Lowry could pull off a Masters if his putter got hot some year. Another 5 or 6 tries at it anyways. And yeah, he needed Rory to win the Zurich to take his pressure off, as he's buckled under the pressure a couple of times, but I don't think Shane is done.
Well, yeah, and you know, part of this for me, like this is the fun thing about questions like these, is you can bring your own kind of bias into play. And part of it for me is just like the guy seems entitled and reactionary on the course, and I just like the personality doesn't jive with me. I'm not a huge Lowry guy, but sometimes he's hilarious, right? So you kind of go back and forth. I think he hates journalists, right? So there's probably a little bit of that in me where I'm like, oh yeah, you hate me, I hate you, great. I don't know, man. He has a lot of things go right for him that don't necessarily describe, and including where he's from. That's a great point that Scotland would love to have a Shane Lowry. I think if Shane Lowry was American, you probably would never mention his name. Or no, you would because he won a major, but you'd only mention it in that context. Like he never would have played a Ryder Cup, things like that.
But he clearly has something that attracts people to his personality. So I understand your American thought process on it. And we mentioned a Brian Harman comparison of somebody who won an Open Championship and has, you know, done really good things on the PGA Tour. But there's nothing to latch onto with Brian Harman. There's 50 American Brian Harmans out there. I mean, okay, Brian Harman, you know, goes out and shoots some animals he shouldn't shoot, and that's his most endearing quality, it seems, for most Americans. Like, Shane, so, yes, he has a huge support base in this country where he would be seen, in general, as being incredibly down-to-earth. And I've said this, I'm sure, to you before, that if you were to do a survey of Irish people and say, what sports person would you most like to go for a pint with, Shane Lowry would be comfortably top of that list. That he's very, he's very Irish in a way that McIlroy isn't. He loves the GAA. He grew up in a brilliant GAA family. His, you know, his father and his uncles were part of an Offaly team. He loves his hurling. He's at all the big Irish sporting occasions. He wears it on his sleeve in a way that people feel very proud of and can excuse some of the other stuff because of that. I think he's had one of those great careers of moments, in that everything good that's happened has been spectacularly good. That all of these iconic par threes, and again, he celebrates them. He doesn't do what a Brian Harman would do, which would be a sort of shrug of the shoulders and I'm a little bit embarrassed. He kind of goes a little bit wild, and he bought into it. And one of the things that really, I think, brought him beyond an Irish support base was probably the Saturday at Portrush in 2019, when it was clear he'd sort of run away with it. And he just sort of went with it. He didn't do the typical golfer sports person thing of, oh, it's not over, I'm not good. No, it's like, I'm kind of going to lose the run of myself here. And he enjoys his successes. And, you know, you could argue that the emotion that he puts into it is what costs him from time to time, that, you know, if he was a Brian Harman, you know, maybe Brian Harman responds better to putting the ball in the water at 60 in a cognizant than Shane Lowry does. Mm-hmm. But I also think when we're comparing on this imaginary list that Stevie K has come up with that only includes six Irish golfers, and, you know, Christy O'Connor Sr. never won a major, so it doesn't, you know, you don't even need to have won a major to be within that. Is every sport not like this? That achievement is one thing. So the silverware bit and success is only one part of a person's sporting greatness. There's the other bit, which is how much people just love you. Like, Rory has it to a certain level as well. We, you know, we would have spoken about this a lot before Rory won the Masters and completed the career Grand Slam. Who's had a greater career, Rory or Brooks Koepka? Well, Brooks has won more majors. Rory's won more tournaments. But Rory's had a far greater impact, will leave a far greater legacy than Brooks Koepka. And I think Shane Lowry will leave a far greater legacy than 95% of the players who've come through over the same period of time. And I think a point was touched on there that's a good one. He's had a lot. Like, he won the Irish Open as an amateur in 2009. That's 17 years ago. He's still in the world's top 50 now. So there is a level of consistency there.
Yeah. Yeah. These are all great counter arguments. And I really can't argue with them. And yeah, he's had a nice career. I just think, you know, the down to earth thing is just where you lose me a little bit, where it's like, yeah, he likes to celebrate. But I just think there's a certain entitlement about the guy when he's on the course that rubs me the wrong way. That's the only thing I'll say about it. I've never had a negative personal interaction with him. This is all just from observation. So it's, you know, we're you and I are talking right now, not as like one golf journalist, but just as like buddies in a pub or something where everything you said is right. And he deserves a lot of credit. Look, there's worse things than being a golfer who has these amazing moments, but may not be the most consistent overall. That's still an awesome career. And yeah, the way he celebrated his Open, the way he celebrated his Ryder Cup, the way he celebrates all that kind of stuff, all great. There's just something I don't like about when he says, like, you know, fuck this place when he's on the course, or just this sort of like peevish quality to him that annoys me, especially in these last few years of his career. He seems to me like a little too big for his britches in some way that I don't like. And that's all I'll say. It's a complete vibe thing. That's just my take. And I fully say I could be very wrong about this, but that's just kind of
I think there's lots of people and lots of Irish people who agree with that part of being a bit of a brat at times and, you know, not having the level of control you should have and throwing your toys out of the pram unnecessarily. And you're right on the journalist thing. I don't know if it's that Shane doesn't respect journalists or anything like that. I think Shane is looking for, how do I phrase this? I was going to say a level of humanity from journalists that isn't part of our job, that I've just had a bad round, so why would you even think about coming to talk to me, as opposed to, that's our job. Our job isn't to just be there when you're having a good old time. Our job is to be there all the time.
So when he does that, I wouldn't say he's looking for humanity. The way I see it is he's looking for a deference, right? Like, kneel before your king. How dare you? How dare you approach me in this moment, you swine? Like that's kind of the vibe that
The irony of that is, which maybe people have sat down and said this to him, is doing that to a journalist makes them 10 times more likely to approach you every single time that they know you're in a bad mood. Because you'll get a reaction.
Oh, yeah. Well, you think that's true?
Oh, well, I think there's a bit. You're right. Like, there's a little bit of a, and we've all been in that. We've all been in that position.
Sometimes you can be scared that me. Oh, fuck, yeah. I'm not doing this.
Well, I'm sure I've mentioned this before. The most scared I've ever been in my life was in Port Rush in 2019 when Darren Clark was finishing his round. And I thought, I'll go and get an interview with Darren Clark. And I said, I was the only person in the media tent. And Darren Clark was, say, one under. Darren Clark, I think, might have been one under or two under playing 18. So I was like, oh, yeah, I'd love to. There's nobody else around. Could I chat to Darren Clark? He said, yeah, I'll go get him. And off he goes. And then Darren Clark double bogeys 18 to miss the cut. And I'm like, oh, no. Oh, no. Please, please don't come back with Darren Clark. Please don't come back with Darren. So I was stood there going, do I do the cowardly thing and just leave myself and pretend this never happened? Pretend I never even asked.
Yeah,
or do I stand there? So I stood there for 20 minutes, and thankfully he eventually came back and said, Darren doesn't really feel like doing any interviews right now.
You dodged a bullet there. I went to a senior tour event here in Cary, North Carolina. It's called the SAS. This was when I was writing my Ryder Cup book, and it was like Davis Love was going to be there, Fred Couples, Montgomery, I think, was there, and Darren Clark was there. And I was going to go, talk to all of them. I figured this is like so low stakes, they'll all be happy to talk. Or, you know, if they're not, at least it's not like that big a deal. Everything went well. I had great conversations with Love and Couples. I had a couple, you know, everything went great until I approached Darren Clark, and it was just the worst experience of my career. It was unbelievable how hostile it was. First of all, he told me no when he was sitting in a cart. And it was just like very brusque, and it just like, wow, this doesn't really feel, nobody's around him, right? And I kind of watched him on the range and waited until he had a moment when he went back to his car. And all I was trying to do was set up something for later. And then he's like, maybe later, maybe later. And then I found him in the locker room and he was eating. And I went up and said, hey, you know, we said maybe later, what do you think? And he snapped at me. He's like, I'm eating my food. I'm eating my food. It was awful. And there's a lot of people who like Darren Clark. So I think I just caught him on a bad day or something. But it was truly, I left going, wow, this is an interaction I did not see coming at all.
Well, he is a key part of the Golf Weekly intro with his comment to Dave McIntyre back in 2011 of, that's a particularly stupid question.
Yeah, that makes total sense.
That was one of the greatest moments of my life, because I was stood beside Dave when Dave asked him the question. And as you know, there's a lot of solidarity between journalists and broadcasters. 50% of me is like, thank God he didn't say it to me. And 50% of me is delighted to see Dave get smacked down.
Yeah, right.
In fairness, it was a particularly stupid question, we've all decided in hindsight, where he was essentially asking, Clark had missed the cut, and it was at the Irish Open in Kerry in Killarney, and it was 2 weeks after he'd won the Open, his first tournament back, and he was going to the PGA, was still in August, so he was going to the PGA afterwards, and Dave had said, is it a good thing that you've missed the cut because you get more practice in?
Yeah,
I think essentially going, you've been on the piss for 2 weeks since you won the Open, so maybe you actually just, you know, getting,
instead of being that's a terrible question for that moment. I mean, it's hilarious, but it's like obviously they're going to get pissed off at that time moment.
it was a follow-up to other questions, so it did make some sense of, okay, maybe you're not prepared for tournament golf right now. You just need to get back on the range for a while. And Darren Clarke, known for absolutely loving the range and the practice and the 6 hours and the slog and all of that. So yeah, thanks to Darren Clarke for that. Stevie K did come back and he said, the main issue with Shane is how overpraised he is. It simply doesn't stack up. Is he a golf version of Jordan Henderson? Someone who's won a league title, but you want him around the place. Which I don't think is a... Again, Jordan, do you know Jordan Henderson?
Yeah, Liverpool.
Liverpool captain. And very popular with footballers. So, supporters would never be quite sure what he does, but all footballers would tell you. He was sort of in the England squad for this World Cup, even though nobody felt he should have been, because he has great leadership qualities and a good guy around the place. And then he obviously tripped over the advertising.
Right? Didn't he also get a red card or something?
Yes.
Or a yellow card?
Well, that's why they kept him. So they kept him in as part of the squad even after he broke his arm, basically for that reason, so he could give out to the referee while being in the dugout and the fourth official, and eventually they just sent him off. Do you know who I would compare Lowry to, and very different personalities?
Mm-hmm.
Justin Thomas. Again,
gosh.
So there's a little bit of the part of Shane's fame comes from being Rory's best mate.
Right.
Part of JT's fame comes from being Jordan Spieth's best mate. Now,
Originally,
he has gone past that, and JT is two majors and all of that. But again, anytime I watch the American coverage of Justin Thomas, it's as if this guy has won six majors.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. I can see the comparison on those merits. I thought you were going to compare their personalities and I was going to push back. But yeah, I think I can see what you're saying on that.
Thank you.
But JT has also been an unbelievable Ryder Cup and President's Cup player, right? Like his
yeah, pedigree. Yeah, I remember him holding all those putts to win the Ryder Cup like Shane Lowry. if you want a guy to perform, Friday morning and a Saturday morning, JT's your guy. In Ireland, we prefer the guy who holds the winning putt. And you know how I know that? Because we've had loads of them.
Yeah. Amazing. I can't tell you how
mad I am. I'd say if you were to go back through the history books of the last 10 Ryder Cups. Sorry, actually, I'm going to go and do this afterwards. I'd say more Irish players have hold putts to win the Ryder Cup in the last 20 years than Americans.
Well, that's obviously not true, right? Come on.
It's pretty close.
Come on, let's go. Let's do this. Should we move on?
It's pretty close. We've had more of an impact.
Yeah, okay, so in the last 20 years, that's going back to what, 97? We'll go back to the 97 Cup. The U.S. has won four times, so we've had four winning putts, obviously. You've had Lowry. No,
let's go back to 1995.
Oh, okay, you're going to pick and choose?
Well, I need to include Philip Walton. Sorry, let's go back to 2002, Paul McGinley. So we're going back 25 years. We're going back 25 years, if that's okay with you. So we've got McGinley... Sure. Oh, sorry, going back 35. Yeah, we're fine. We're fine at 1995 then. So that's 31 years ago. So then we get Philip Walton. We get McGinley. Yeah. G-Mac.
Wait, G-Mac. Oh, against Hunter Mahan.
Against Hunter Mahan.
Fair enough.
Yep. And Shane Lowry. Yeah. So there's four of them.
Yeah. Okay. It's just like, you know what? If you roll a dice, sometimes you're going to get three, four times in a row. That's just a historical anomaly.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
We're one small part of this team. So, yes, since 1995, four Irish players have got the winning point in a Ryder Cup and four Americans have got the winning point in a Ryder Cup.
Okay, what is that? That's just a random variance thing. It's just complete luck.
That's a country that when the big moments are there for the taking, that we take them.
This is, you're just driving me to be jingoistic American. I'm about to like make a fool of myself because you're doing it to me. You're stoking the nationalist anger. I'm going to be like, you know, chanting Trump's name here in a second.
The beard is in my question. Poor old Shane Lowry's getting a very hard time. I'm going to have to keep defending him here. For years, everyone made excuses for Fleetwood Lowry that it's hard to win on the PGA Tour. Dunlap, Higo, Champ, Bob, Power, Thorbjornsson, Wallace, Brennan, Koivun all found it easy enough. I could go on. Is it not just the case that there are people who can win and people who can't? Fleetwood and Lowry are not winners. Good earners, yes, but not winners.
Well, Lowry won a major, so let's...
And also,
Yeah.
Fleetwood, as we said, won. Well, he has won, and he's won lots of times on the European Tour. And if anything, I think his point is contradicting himself there. I'm sorry, you can answer this question because it is for you. But a lot of those guys, because of the way golf has gone, I would say are winning lesser tournaments. Whereas when you get to that top level that Fleetwood and Lowry are at, you're kind of only ever playing against the best guys all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, it's very rare that Fleetwood, you know, Fleetwood has basically gone through the Spieth era, the Koepka era, the Rory era, and now the Scheffler era. And that's a lot of good players he's playing against.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, you mentioned all these other players, but to defend your side here for a minute, in any given PGA Tour event, out of 100, let's, you know, it's going to be less from now on, but let's say out of 150 players, how many Americans do you have? Like 100, you know, at least? And so, you list all these players like, oh, look, all these guys have won. Yeah, but basically you're going to have, you know, a strange anomalous winner all the time, or you're going to have guys catch fire for a week, and just mathematically, they're probably going to be Americans. And so, look, there's a whole lot of different things here, right? Jackson Koivun is a generational talent, and he's going to be good for probably the next two decades. He's going to be better than Fleetwood was. He's going to be better than Lowry. He's going to be better than all these guys, in my opinion. Some of those other guys, though, where you're like, okay, yeah, Seamus Power has won, but like you said, Nathan, wasn't that some like Stableford Fall event or something?
Yeah, so his couple of wins, I think, were both on opposite events.
Yeah, so I mean, I just don't think that's truly comparable. And Fleetwood won the you know, Tour Championship, which people have different thoughts about that. On one hand, you go, yeah, there's only 30 people there. On the other hand, they're the 30 best golfers in the world. And so, you know, he won that. Lowry, yeah. Look, Lowry's just not at that level, though, is what I'm saying. Like, you know, he caught fire for his one Open, but he's not on the level of, like, a Fleetwood career-wise. So, I don't know. I just don't think this question really tracks that well. Can you say, like, Nick Dunlap's a winner? Yeah, he won a couple times, but now look at him. He's shooting 85s. It's just that guys catch fire, and winning week to week is just a matter of luck, right? Look at Scotty's year this year. He's won one time. He's finished second, I think, six times. And you're like, that's crazy. Well, he just so happens to run into Cam Young, like, having a life or event at Doral, or he runs into Koivun having a life or event at the 3M. And so, yeah, just sometimes it's hard to win, and I don't know. I think that just cherry picking a few different Americans is just kind of a weird way to go about that.
So on that,
with all respect to the beard, one of our favorites.
We won't debate it any further, but you can just give me a one word answer. Right now, today, whose career would you prefer to have had? Shane Lowry or Tommy Fleetwood?
Well, because one word, Lowry.
We always get him in the end. We get him in the end. Brian Haar. Sorry, Brian Haar. Uh-oh. Brian Harman is now listening. I take it all back, okay. Brian. I was very excited by your victory at the Open Championship, and I love seeing you whenever you pop up on my featured covered on
the PGA Nathan's Tour. Your biggest fan. Nathan's your biggest fan.
Yeah, bring me a bit of bison or something next time you're in Ireland. What does he hunt?
Well, so yeah, he'll hunt. I know he hunts deer. By the way, did you see the social media video with him going over all the things that a man should be able to do? He's got a list on his phone that he and his friends add to. So it's like, you should got to be able to, like, change your own oil in your car. You've got to be able to throw a spiral. It goes through all walks of life. It was kind of a funny list. It was the most American thing you can ever imagine. But it made me laugh. There's just a lot of different things on there.
If Neiman was allowed to wear shorts in the majors, what would the over-under for major wins be for him? Very good for Liv, invisible elsewhere, even on occasion when he plays the DP Tour. It's absolutely baffling at times, seeing how bad he's been over the last 5 years at majors. 11 wins since December 23 on Liv, Euro and Asian Tours. Since joining Liv, he's played 15 majors and only two top 10s for someone of his quality. What could be the issue?
Yeah, I like the idea of, like, looking at the two tours and going, what's the difference here? And then going, probably the shorts. It's probably the shorts. And I know that was tongue-in-cheek from Brian, but no, I don't know. This is a guy that, look, Sepp Straka is going through recently the similar thing. If you look at his major appearances, they're awful. I mean, for the last 3 years. And he's had, you know, very good PGA Tour seasons, and he's won some events. So I don't know. I think some guys obviously just get caught up in the nerves. It doesn't mean they'll do it forever. But yeah, I think Niemann really, really struggles. And I also think, Nathan, you've probably seen this too in all level of sports, that once a narrative gets going, it could be like 2 years of like, wow, we just kind of had an, you know, it's sort of an accident that you didn't perform well at majors, just had a few bad weeks or a course you didn't like. But then when people start saying, wow, this guy stinks at majors, this guy is really bad, all of a sudden that can get in your head and you can go, why, you know, what's wrong with me? And it can become a little bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy.
And definitely a big thing in golf, that we're constantly searching for a narrative to go around every player. Yep. And it is, what's the word I'm looking for, where you sort of decide that it has become this thing. Like, if he had stayed in the PGA Tour, we'd still be having a similar conversation. It'd be more of his level of underachievement. But like, he's, we have a very set thing we can nail this on, which is he went to live. So therefore, that is why.
Yeah, but no, to your point, he was bad at majors before he went to live, although he's still very, very young, so.
Not per profit. Why is the USGA handicap system so easy to manipulate? Heading out to California on holidays soon, brother-in-law told me sign up for NGCA, and lo and behold, they offer me a GHIN number. I can then post scores without anyone attesting to them like is done here. The positive news is I'm usually screwed when I play over here, so I made up a load of high scores, and they'd be giving me shots now. Ching, ching. Seriously, though, this is the system the rest of the world then followed, minus score confirmation. It's so open to abuse, it's not funny.
Yeah, but what are you supposed to do? I mean, so first of all, I don't think I knew this. Over there, you have to have a witness. Like, you can't play a round alone and count it?
No.
Oh, crazy.
No, so you even, look, even a casual round. And correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, the app will insist that you're both in the same play. I can't just go, Shane, I played with Shane Ryan yesterday when I shot 72. We'll have to be in the same place at the same time.
What about this? Let's say you go to a course and you're saying, hey, can you fit me in or something? And they get you out there with some strangers. Can one of the strangers attest to your score?
Yes. Yeah. So, because on the app, you can just put in their Golf Ireland number and then it'll come up in their phone to attest to it.
I think a lot, maybe it's different here in that we have so many more golf courses and that you will be playing alone a little bit more. I don't know if that's true anymore. It always seems crowded. But look, any handicap system is able to be manipulated, right? It's all in the honor system. I'm sure you have sandbaggers there. I'm sure you have vanity handicaps there. You know, if you can just as easily get a friend to attest, right, as you can lie about your own thing. So, I don't know. To me, it's not a big matter.
No. It's far. Maybe. Some friends might just sign anything away. But
no, but you're saying it's harder,
still more difficult
alone
than I'll just throw in a couple of scores here.
Yeah, I guess. But I like being able to count your solo rounds. I don't really. I would not like if they didn't let you do that. Golf's a game of integrity, and if you're going to violate the integrity, you're going to violate the integrity, I think. I don't know that you could devise a better system. I'll tell you what stinks is the differential they do with the nine-hole scores. So now you can enter a nine-hole score, and they give you a differential, but it's just annoying because they put the other nine holes. They used to just take, like, okay, if you post a nine-hole score, we're going to wait till you post another nine-hole score, then we're going to stick them together and give you an 18-hole score. That's fine. Now they simulate your performance based on your handicap. So let's say I'm a 13 handicap, but I have a career day and go out and shoot a 37. They're going to give me like a 43 or 44 for the back nine. It doesn't matter what I played like or anything like that. And maybe statistically they've got a point, but I don't like that they simulate results. Like, your handicap is based on holes that you didn't play. I think that stinks. But in terms of the system beyond that, it's like, what are you going to do? What's going to be better? I personally prefer that you can count solo rounds.
All right. That is us done for this week's Ryan Line. Shane Ryan, thank you as ever. Poor old Shane Lowry's ears will be burning yet again. We love you, Shane.
Well, apologize to everyone from Ireland. I've probably not endeared myself to you today, but all I can do is be honest the American way, Nathan.
Wow. You just go think about, write a book on that, about the Irish dominance of the Ryder Cup. You should write a book on that.
I'll call it The Great Fluke, Irish Dominance.
On that note, we're gone. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye, everybody.
All my exes wear Rolexes, but I reside right here in Dardanelle. All
starter kit right here.